Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU.
This week, how much will promoters lose from the Festicket collapse? Welcome to Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. I'm Andy Malt. With me is Chris Cook. Hello, Chris.
I didn't know we were introducing rhythm into the podcast.
Well, there's always rhythm. I just changed the rhythm. This whole podcast is like a song.
Hello there, I think is what you're waiting for.
Yeah.
Despite your slightly weird way of saying hello.
As ever, we're going to take a look back at some of the biggest and most interesting music industry news stories of the last week. A week when Little Sims won the Mercury Prize.
Yeah, the postponed Mercury Prize, because as you might remember, the original date for the Mercury Prize occurred in a week where here in the UK, a major event occurred involving somebody called Liz. And no major event involving somebody called Liz happened last week, so it was fine. So the original edition of the Mercury Prize, which was meant to happen in September, didn't happen, so it was rescheduled to last week. It was great that Little Sims won it. I think you're very much of the opinion that was the correct decision, although it did feel like quite an afterthought in the end because it was all pushed back a month. I'm not sure that many people were really paying attention to this year's Mercury Prize ceremony.
No, I actually did forget that it was happening. I watched it the next day, though. While I was writing the story, I watched the whole show. So I saw it, but at the time, yeah, I looked at my phone at some point and it said, oh, Little Sims has won the Mercury Prize. And I was like, oh, yeah, that was happening.
And I think for the people who actually attended, assuming it was mainly the same people who attended the first go, because remember, the announcement that the Queen Elizabeth, had died happened just as the original Mercury Prize ceremony was getting underway. Everyone had sat down, they were all expecting food, and then it all got cancelled. And so that's quite a memorable night, isn't it? You went to an awards event, yeah. You sat down for dinner, and then it all got cancelled at the last minute, and everyone had to go and desperately find somewhere in Hammersmith that A, sold food, and B, sold food that they would want to eat. So that was quite a memorable experience, and therefore, unfortunately, I suspect that most people will remember that more than the night where Little Sims was handed her award. But nevertheless, well done to her. Everybody performed except Harry Styles. Everyone performed live except Harry Styles.
Yeah, they sent in a Well, do you know what was weird? They because he wasn't there, he was on tour in the US, they played a video of him performing at, it might have been Radio 1's Big Weekend, I can't remember, something like that. It was like, you know, it was a performance that happened for some BBC thing. And before they played that, he did a little acceptance speech for his kind of runner-up trophy. But, I mean, that was, like, no one else got to do that acceptance speech. I don't know why they let him do it.
Also, at that point, you're not meant to know he's a runner-up, are you?
No, but he was standing there with his little I didn't win trophy. So, I mean, maybe he had another one prepared with the main trophy. But yeah, that was odd because everyone else just came on and performed. But yeah, Harry got a little thanks for this thing. Here's a video of me doing a song.
Any Harry Styles fans thinking that they missed out on a proper live performance because of the postponement and that was Queen Elizabeth's fault? He wasn't going to play the original gig either. No. Because he's doing lots of gigging and possibly doesn't care. So even if Queen Elizabeth hadn't died, you were not going to get a Harry Styles performance. So stop laying into the Queen, Harry Styles fans. She did not deprive you of anything.
I think that might be the Harry Styles fans who live in your head, but yes.
So well done to Little Sims. You rate that album. I think I'm right in saying that.
Yeah. And also, I predicted it would win from the off, so that was good.
It's not often
I like it when that happens.
Your predictions are correct, so that's...
I mean, I don't know if that's true, but I mean, it was by far the best album, so it seems right that they would give it to her.
And of course, the Mercury Prize judging panel were keen to stress what a strong year it had been for UK and Irish music and how hard it was to pick an overall winner, which
they do say that every exactly. year, though.
That's a statement they've said every year for 30 years.
It's a kind of pointless bit of their statement. Oh, there were some good albums. Yeah, that's the point. That's why you're there. Stop saying that.
I look forward to the year where they say, oh, it's a bit of a shit shortlist this year, but we've reluctantly picked one to give the cash. That would...
it was really easy because there was really only one thing there.
Anyway, that was the Mercury Prize awarded finally last week, but there ain't much to say about it. So that is the reason why this is not something that we're going to be talking about on this week's set list.
No, later on we'll be discussing the news that the seven members of BTS will serve their 2 years of military service in South Korea after all. But first, administrators for the collapsed ticketing company Festicket have confirmed that a number of the promoters with whom it worked are insisting that the money the company collected for their shows and events was meant to be held in trust. And that would mean that the money Festicket collected from ticket buyers would be kept separate from its own accounts and would therefore be protected in the event that the company collapsed. Now, the company did collapse, and it turns out that this money was not held in trust after all.
Now, we've mentioned this story before in passing on Setlist, and obviously we've reported on it in quite some detail over in the CMU Daily, but this company, Festicket, it was a relatively young ticketing company, best known for specialising in putting together and selling packages, like travel packages, around festivals and big music events, although it also had some other parts to the business because it had acquired some other companies, so it had a more conventional ticketing platform as part of the group, and a ticketing tech company called Event Genius. So there were various things going on there. And last month, we got confirmation that the entire Festicket business was falling into administration. There have been indications that things were not looking good for a few months prior to that, and various documents have been filed with Companies House in the UK that suggested that there were financial problems within Festicket. We assumed from the off an hangover of all of the challenges that occurred to anybody in the ticketing business during the pandemic. And yeah, so last month we got the confirmation that the company was heading into administration.
So before Festicket officially filed to enter administration last month, Light, the US-based platform that allows event promoters to manage ticket reservations and resale, committed to buy some of the assets of Event Genius. And then later in September, Light confirmed that it had agreed to buy all of the assets of Festicket, including Event Genius as a whole. But while that deal safeguarded jobs and removed Festicket's liabilities to its employees, it only generated about £100,000 in cash, which was not anywhere near enough to cover the significant money owed to its creditors.
Yes, and if you are one of those creditors, how much money Festicket made through the Lyft deal, and of course, how much money Festicket has or has access to elsewhere, is really important, because if you're owed money by the company, your big question is, am I going to get that money back? And if I'm not going to get all of it back, how much of it will I get back? Now, of the people who were owed money by Festicket at the point that it fell into administration, most of them actually were promoters who had used one of the Festicket services to sell their tickets, and Festicket had taken the money from the ticket buyer, but not yet handed it over to the promoter, and so the money was sitting there. Although, as you alluded to at the start, for at least some of those promoters, we don't know if this is all of them, but for some of those promoters, they seem to have been under the impression that when Festicket was selling tickets and collecting money, it would take its commissions, its fees out of the sale, and that would go into Festicket's bank account. But the actual ticket price money, the money that was due to the promoter, was sitting separately from all of that. And as you said, the term we would use was the money was sitting in trust. So it isn't sitting in Festicket's bank account, it's sitting somewhere else, probably waiting for the event that the ticket was linked to happen. And then once the event happened, the money would then be handed over to the promoter. And as you also alluded to, if things were set up that way, then in a way that money should be safeguarded. So maybe it doesn't matter to those promoters how much money Festicket has, how much money the Lyft deal generated, providing that was the way things were set up. And what we learned last week was it almost certainly was not set up that way.
Yes, we know about the financial structure of FestiKit now because last week the administrators published their report into what went wrong at the company and what state it is now in. And as expected, that report blames the collapse on the COVID-19 pandemic and the resulting shutdown of live music. It says, following the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic in March 2020 and the resulting lockdowns, social distancing and restrictions on travel, the company experienced an unprecedented level of ticketing refunds and deferment requests due to the multiple event cancellations and a reduction in consumer confidence. The company's systems were challenged by the new requirements created by the pandemic, it goes on. This was further exacerbated by the integration of the other ticketing companies it had acquired, which had not yet completed. As a result, the company's financial and internal reporting systems became increasingly reliant on manual calculation and input. So facing all of those challenges, the report says the company cut its overheads and then secured further funding through the sale of around £5 million worth of convertible loan notes and equity. But the administrators confirm this was not sufficient to support its losses. FestiKit's debts, other than the administrator's fees and what is owed to the UK tax authority, come to a bit over £22.5 million, of which a little under £18.5 million is owed to the promoters who sold tickets via the firm's various platforms. And according to the administrator's report, 115 promoters are owed money, with a number of those owed in excess of £1 million, including AEG Presents, Event Horizon, Festco, Lost Paradise Glenworth Valley, Madcall and Slammin' Events.
So in terms of what money FestiKit has available to it to try and pay off some of those debts, obviously we've already said there's the 100 grand from the Lyft deal. Not a lot of money, although apparently the original offer was a pound. So the fact the administrator's got 100 grand, I guess, is something of an achievement. In addition to that, there is some other money available. So there is just over 5.5 million sitting in FestiKit's bank account. And more than that, over 7.5 million is sitting within the accounts of the online payment processor Stripe, which was the technology that the company was using in order to actually do the credit card and debit card transactions. Now, on one level, that's another 7.5 million that should be available to FestiKit, although it's not a given that all of that will come from Stripe to the FestiKit administrators, because, for example, some of that money could relate to events that haven't happened yet. And if those events were to cancel, because I don't know, the promoter's ticketing company has just gone under and they can't get access to the money to stage the event. If those events don't happen and then refunds are due, then Stripe would probably automatically issue the refunds itself. So it may be that while in theory there's more than 7.5 million sitting with Stripe, in addition to the 5.5 million sitting in the bank account, it could be that less than that comes through. But there is a decent chunk of money available. That said, given that the first people to get paid whenever a company goes into administration are the administrators, so they always get paid first. So a chunk of this money will go to the administrators who are overseeing all of this. The next people who get paid after the administrators are the tax authorities. So here in the UK, HMRC. So any tax bills that need to be paid will be paid next. Employees usually then also have a preference in this system, but of course the employee liabilities were covered by the Lyft transaction. And then what is left is then divided up between all of the other creditors, including all of those promoters. Now, obviously the maths is not accurate at this stage, not least because the administrators don't yet know quite how much of that Stripe money will be paid through, but they've done some calculations and they reckon that the creditors can expect to currently receive somewhere between 10 to 30% of the money they are owed. So I guess even best case scenario, as this administration goes through the motions, those promoters who are owed money are going to see at best 30% of what they're owed. They're going to take a 70% hit on those ticket sales.
But as we said, some of the promoters who used FestiKit services are saying that the money from their ticket sales should have been held in trust. And we now know that that wasn't the case. And in fact, it's something that has been talked about before. It was something, you know, it's been confirmed, but it was something we were aware of before. In a recent post on Facebook, the Motion venue in Bristol, which was a Festicket customer, said, "The funds we are due, quite simply, should not have been moved from the holding account, as Festicket does not pay VAT on this money due to client account regulations, with them acting as a merchant. If the money has been spent, they have defrauded us, the customers, and they have also defrauded the government." Meanwhile, Ben Street from Wild Paths and the Wild Fields Festival raised this issue when talking about the Festicket administration to Access All Areas, saying, "This company has had a huge impact on the future of a number of independent event organisers, and there is currently no resolution in sight. Their clients' money should have been held in trust, but it appears that this was not the case. Instead, assets have been stripped and sold on to a large American buyer. The debt remains with the gutted shell company, currently in administration, with big question marks over any sort of fair remuneration."
So those were the comments that were made about this situation, about Festicket seemingly not holding these monies in trust, as the promoters had assumed. That's what had been said prior to last week. Then, of course, last week we got that report from the administrators, and they did make an official statement on this particular issue within that report. They stated, "We have received communications from a number of the promoter creditors of Festicket who are asserting that the terms of their contract with the company implied that the net monies from ticket sales collected by the company were to be held in trust by the company for the respective promoters. Our understanding is that the company did not segregate or ring-fence any assets for the benefit of any specific parties." They then went on, "We are aware that trust claims are a complex area of law." They certainly are. That was a bit of my law degree that drove me insane. Anyway, we are aware that trust claims are a complex area of law and will require expert legal advice, which we are already in the process of obtaining. For the purposes of our estimates of outcomes for creditors in this document, that being last week's report, we have assumed that the assets are not subject to trust claims. However, if this were not to be the case, this would significantly impact the recoveries for those creditors whose claims were not subject to a trust arrangement. So what they're basically saying there is, if it does turn out that there was some sort of agreement that the money should have been held in trust, for those promoters where that agreement was in force, I guess they would probably get priority to the money that is available, and then that means that any promoters who didn't have that as part of their deal were almost, well, I don't know, I'm guessing would probably receive nothing. But I suppose there's also the issue that if they discovered that a lot of the promoters were, well, I guess under the impression is not enough, but if it can be shown that there was an agreement for the majority of the promoters that the money would be held in trust, well, that's a problem, because there clearly is not enough money to go around. So it's interesting, the statement that the administrators put in their report, in that they were saying that the promoters had asserted that the terms of their contract implied that the net monies from ticket sales should be held on trust, etc., etc. And it would be really interesting to know what that means. Do they mean that there were actual terms in the contract which were possibly a little bit ambiguous, but that could be read to say this money should be held in trust? Or are they saying, okay, it might not explicitly say so in our contract, but it was very much part of our conversations with the Festicket people that this money was going to be held in trust? Because legally, that would be different. You know, if it's an ambiguous term in the contract, if it went to court, then it would be for the court to work out, well, what does that term mean? Whereas if the contract is actually silent on this, but the promoters are going to say, but we had a conversation, it was our understanding, well, I mean, that's a lot weaker when you're trying to fight this in court. But yeah, it will be interesting to see how these claims develop, and if it is decided that, yes, some of the promoters did have an agreement that the money was held on trust, what does that mean for the promoters who didn't? Does it mean they'll see nothing? And if it is decided that some of those agreements are in place and there simply isn't enough money to go round, even to the people that had that trust term in their deal, well, that then puts lots of questions about the way Festicket was managed and run by its previous senior management team. So, interesting development. No fun at all for any of the promoters who've been affected by this, and a lot of really good promoters in that list. Some owed a few thousand, but some, as you say, owed in excess of £1 million. So very sad for those promoters, and we desperately hope that they get as much money as they can and we don't see a knock-on effect of promoters and events going out of business as a result. But yeah, I think we'll all be following this story very closely to see what was agreed, and if it turns out that these in-trust agreements were there, what does that even mean?
And finally, on this edition of Setlist, Big Hit Music, one of the labels owned by South Korean entertainment company HYBE, has announced that the seven members of BTS will enlist in full military service in the country after more than 2 years of debate over whether or not they should be granted an exemption. In a statement issued last week, the label said, Big Hit Music is proud to announce that the members of BTS are currently moving forward with plans to fulfill their military service. After the phenomenal concert to support Busan's bid for the World Expo 2030, which took place the weekend before last, and as each individual member embarks on solo endeavours, it's the perfect time and the members of BTS are honoured to serve. So the oldest member of the group, Jin, will be the first to enlist in the military, possibly by the end of this month, once he's completed the promotional activities for his recent solo album. And then we don't actually yet have a timeline for the rest of them, but as the statement said, they are all currently in the process of releasing solo material. So I guess, you know, the big celebration at the end of each of those campaigns will be joining the army, which, you know, that's a way of doing it.
They could have some staging where they walk through a door and pyros go off and there's like, you know, dry ice and turn it into a big event on YouTube. We'll see. I'm sure if there's a way of turning this into good monetizable content, then the team behind BTS will make it happen. So let's quickly recap here. We have talked about this before on Setlist and a lot in the CMU Daily. But basically, under South Korean law, all able-bodied men must begin serving around 2 years in the military at some point between the ages of 18 and 28. There are formal exemptions in South Korean law for athletes and for classical musicians, but alas, no exemptions for global K-pop superstars. Now, prior to this announcement, obviously, no members of the group had enlisted into the military, despite the fact that the aforementioned Jin turned 28 2 years ago. So really, he should have been doing this. Well, it would be the end of it by now, wouldn't he, if he'd gone in 2 years ago?
Yeah.
The reason why he was able to postpone it to this point is, although there are not exemptions for K-pop superstars under law, a change was made to the law to allow certain pop stars. Now, the way it was worded, some people argued that basically it was a BTS rule. It would only ever apply to BTS.
Yeah. It was pop stars who'd won a specific commendation in Korea, and I think the only pop stars who'd won that commendation are the members of BTS. So yeah, it was very specific to the members of BTS. But hey, it was a rule change nonetheless.
And that meant that although Jin was 28, he had another 2 years, and I think maybe the hope was that there could be a bigger rule change in those 2 years, resulting in a full exemption, as might apply to a sports star or a classical musician. But that change was not coming, and this was getting very pressing, because even with that extension in law, we were getting to the point where basically Jin would need to enlist by the end of this year, so time was running out.
Yeah, and obviously the reason that this story's been running on for so long is because this is a hugely divisive issue in South Korea. The military service is a big deal and people take it very seriously. And so the debate has been going back and forth. Various proposals have been put forward in the South Korean parliament to deal with this. There's been a lot of debate on both sides. I mean, the big thing is that one, people see it as a very important thing to go and do your military service. And on the other side, there hasn't been a pop group as big as BTS in South Korea ever, and certainly, you know, not as internationally famous ever. They've lasted a lot longer than you might expect a South Korean boy band to last. And they bring a lot of money into the South Korean economy, and that's been a big point pushed forward by the people who thought that they should have been allowed to be exempt from joining the military. And as time's gone on, as I said, there'll be various proposals in Parliament. And to avoid the difficulty of having one side saying, yes, they should go in the army, and one side saying, no, they shouldn't, things have sort of tried to reach a compromise over time. So the most recent thing put forward was a bill put forward by the politician Kim Young-bae, which would have allowed the pop stars to carry out activities in the national interest other than serving in the military, but would have been seen as a national service. So they were still seeing as doing something for their country, although the response to that bill from the government wasn't so positive. So Defence Minister Lee Jung-sup said that the government felt that it was still desirable that the members of BTS carry out their mandatory military service. And so, yes, as that deadline of December for Jin to enlist was drawing ever closer, and we were no closer to getting to the end of the political debate on this, it seems that Big Hit and its parent company HYBE, and I guess members of BTS were probably involved as well, came to the conclusion that they might as well just get the jump on it and say, yeah, we're going to do it. We're looking forward to it. We're really happy to do it, even though we've spent 2 years trying not to do it.
Yeah, so that statement from HYBE continued. Since the creation of BTS over 10 years ago, the band has risen to international success, broken records, and catapulted K-pop into the global stratosphere. Big Hit Music has focused to the milestone moment when it will be possible to respect the needs of the country and for these healthy young men to serve with their countrymen, and that is now. They then confirmed Jin will initiate the process as soon as his schedule for his solo release is concluded at the end of October. He will then follow the enlistment procedure of the Korean government. Other members of the group plan to carry out their military service based on their own individual plans. Both the company and the members of BTS are looking forward to reconvening as a group again around 2025 following their service commitment, which does sort of suggest that all of them are planning on trying to get this over as soon as possible if they're all going to have their 2 years done by 2025. But who knows?
Well, that kind of gives them a year to get all of the solo albums out and promoted. I reckon that works, doesn't it? If they're all starting by 2023 and finishing by 2025, and then back to it.
Back to the grind. Yeah. The statement then concluded, with the release of their first anthology album earlier this year, it opened the path for the members of BTS to take some time to explore individual projects. As part of the HYBE family, we support and encourage our artists and are beyond proud that they will each now have time to explore their unique interests while also doing their duty by being of service to the country they call home.
So that's a bit over the top, isn't it?
A big, bold statement from the BTS label there. And, I mean, you know, you said that one of the reasons why this became such a big debate and story within South Korea is that, well, they are so successful that BTS can actually appear, if you do a sort of a breakdown of the South Korean economy, HYBE as a group, but even just the BTS operations, are significant enough that they actually appear on the radar. So there was an economic question here in that, you know, a significant amount of money is coming into South Korea and the South Korean entertainment industry because of the global success of BTS. And I guess the big question now is, will they be able to structure the next 2-3 years in a way that means, A, through solo projects and other spin-off ventures, there is still decent money coming in, and B, when they do reconvene as one outfit in around 2025, they reckon that there is still an audience and a market to continue at anything near the level of success that they've been operating at in recent years.
Now, whether or not that happens remains to be seen. I mean, BTS would not be the first South Korean pop act to have their career derailed by military service. Arguably, the way was left clear for BTS to become as big as they were because of other acts going into military service. Labels and management companies have always had various different methods to attempt to keep things going, particularly for boy bands, while members go into the military. So, like bands going in one at a time and sort of carrying on with a slimmed down lineup, or going and doing solo projects. And it's not always very successful because other acts move in and fans move on. BTS obviously are much, much bigger than anyone else. So maybe they can weather this over the next 3 years. I think HYBE said that they have quite a lot of stuff recorded already to sort of fill the gap. So obviously, if you stagger all of the members' solo albums over the course of a year, that fills a year. And then if you've got some other stuff, maybe put up some old live shows. I mean, they've got various spin-off things. It's like animated TV series, that sort of thing. Maybe there's enough content ready prepared to fill a couple of years while they're not really operating. And obviously, you've got this buffer now of a year where they can put stuff out, but then you've probably got a year the other side where they start coming out of the military and can start doing solo stuff again as they build back up to reawakening BTS. So maybe it'll be fine. Maybe they've cracked it and it'll all work. But we'll have to wait and see if that's the case. The one thing we do know, talking of uncertainty, is that this had quite a positive effect on HYBE's share price, which has been wobbly of late, because the markets don't like uncertainty and there's been a lot of uncertainty about what was going to happen with BTS. And actually, counterintuitively, once they announced that they were definitely going to go into the military, the share price went up. So removing that uncertainty was a positive thing for shareholders, at least. And I guess it, in part that's because HYBE has, as well as preparing the ground for BTS having to disappear for a while, they've also been expanding the company out. So as well as having various other K-pop groups on their books, they obviously bought Ithaca Holdings, Scooter Braun's company, and so now have a pretty significant US management business with the likes of Justin Bieber on their books. So they're not, you know, going to be out in the cold. They'll still be able to make some money, even if BTS aren't there to bring in the real big bucks.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't want to sow any division between BTS and HYBE, but I suppose if BTS being out of the picture, certainly as a band, and then possibly if we have a year where they're all in the military, so there aren't really any solo projects either, we're just basically going through stuff from the archive. If it does turn out that that creates a gap in the market for another group to come in and basically take over, well, I guess if HYBE can take everything it's learned from BTS and its global network and its contacts in the US and be behind that group, then for HYBE, it doesn't really matter if when BTS come back, they don't come back as big because they're competing. So it would only be a problem if it was another K-pop machine that filled that gap. Although I should stress, because I'm not here to suggest that HYBE have any other motives than ensuring the long-term future of BTS, that they are currently insisting that there is much more yet to come in the years ahead from BTS. So that's reassurance for fans and shareholders alike, I am sure.
Yeah, but there's no more yet to come from Setlist, not on this edition anyway. Much more still to come in the future from Setlist, and we're not even going away at all. I can guarantee you now that neither of us will join the South Korean army in the near future. So we will continue putting out episodes. But that's all we've got time for on this edition of Setlist. If you want to read more about anything we've discussed on this episode of the show, go to the show notes in your podcast player right now or at setlistpodcast.com. Don't forget to subscribe to the show if you've not done that already. Don't forget to rate and review the show. And if you've got anything you want to say to us, you can email us setlist@unlimitedmedia.co.uk. Setlist is the music business podcast from CMU. It's presented by Andy Malt and Chris Cook. And for more on CMU, go to completemusicupdate.com.